you've got to go meet the Grand Duke, right? He's a very important guy. You've got to go to his house. It's like, okay, I rolled to burn it down. Why? Fucking hate dukes. Okay. Well, you've just written 6 pages of story where the Grand Duke is actually a vampire and he's going to betray the people and all this stuff, but your fucking rogue is trying to burn the building down.
Open it outside.
I'm gonna open the door.
Don't do that.
And I'm gonna open the can this way. Hi, ball.
Oh, in case this blows.
Stop overpressurizing your vanilla.
Should I worry about that here?
No, I think you're good. Way too much dead air for the morning. It's a good start, though. Good morning, everybody. This is Sit Soft.
That was us being pensive, or well, not well, pensive. Cautious? Something? There's
paranoid.
Words?
Paranoid.
About opening a can and having it explode all over me.
So the reason I did that is that the last couple times that I opened my vanilla highball gives money, it exploded and gave me sog crotch.
got a bad case of that sog crotch, boy.
Yeah, and sog crotch could have been way worse, like if it was a soda. It would have been all sticky, but since there's no sugar in highball, delicious highball, which made without sweeteners whatsoever, for that smooth, refreshing flavor. It was just very uncomfortably cold, and
crotch.
I don't know how much of the caffeine I absorbed through my skin, but
dude, speaking of which, I got caffeinated shampoo.
Nice.
And it's like just something that Suave or some kind of company that's like used to, they make stuff, but it's like kind of like the mid-grade.
Yeah, the hair products. Yeah, not the great.
It just, every one of them has caffeine in it now, and I'm like, this is awesome. Like, I don't even know if it's doing anything, but
best
is that the idea?
Part of waking up is caffeine in your scalp.
Oh my god. We're very musical today, apparently.
I'm always musical.
I'm always musical, motherfucker.
That's all I do.
I'm excited because tonight we are having our bi-weekly game night.
Bi-weekly?
Isn't that the way you're supposed to describe every 2 weeks?
Fortnightly.
There you go. And this time, Kendrick has set up a wonderful thing.
Well, you helped. Don't.
I'll let him know how much I helped when I get to that part of helping. Kendrick, about a year ago maybe, built this tabletop.
Six
months. It's like this felt and padded cover, or pad and felt covered piece of plywood. By like a very normal size piece of plywood, like 4.5 by 8 or 6 by 8 or whatever.
4 by 8.
4 by 8, yeah.
4 by 8 piece of plywood with headliner foam and
that's the foam, yeah. That's the most important part.
Stretched over the top of it, purple foam.
Purple.
And just a cheap, shitty wood frame around it.
And so
to hold it in place.
It's really cool because we put it on his kitchen table or his dining room table and we game on it. And it's really nice to roll dice on it and do all that stuff. Cause
cars are a dream on it.
Yeah,
so you just pick
picking
up.
Stuff up is really easy. It's that that headliner foam that makes everything pick-upable, if you will.
Yeah, because you can just depress your finger behind like the card, above it or around it, and you can just pick it right up.
Yep.
It's a little softer than a poker table.
Yeah, and that's actually something I enjoy about it, is the fact that it's not like just flat felt.
I found it online, and I can actually post the basic instructions that I followed.
Yeah, actually, let's do that.
So there should be a link in there. I modified them. If I remember correctly, I modified them quite a bit. But I followed a rough instruction. They put a picture of it on there.
But it's cool because, I mean, he did it in a weekend, right?
It was over a week. Basically, it would have been a weekend, but I was taking my time. It was like 3 or 4 days over. I took some days off in
and
the summer.
The hardware, or the, I'm sorry, the hardware you have to buy is minimal. Like,
yeah,
it's
funny.
Just like maybe 2 or 3 pieces of 2x2 or maybe
2x4, I think.
Oh, yeah, okay. And then a piece of plywood, and then the liner and the felt.
Yep. And there's some cross pieces on the bottom for structure.
Oh, that's right.
But we kind of use scrap.
Okay.
You can use, I mean, that's one of those. All told, I think I put about $120 or $140 bucks in there, and honestly, about $80 or $90 of that was the fabric.
Okay. Yeah, and that's
fabric and the foam.
The fabric looks really nice, by the way.
It's very nice fabric, and I decided not to cheap out on it, and that's what it was. Like, you could put that table together for less than $100 bucks if you went for cheaper fabric. Or ditch the headliner foam, but the
headliner
is really nice.
Yeah.
So
don't do it. I mean, you're going to spend thousands of dollars building a table or buying a full table.
Yeah,
you can spend $500 to $600 to build a really nice table, or you can spend $100 to build this, like, kind of topper.
Ramshackle topper. It's not pretty, but it certainly, I mean, the fabric's pretty. The frame needs some, it didn't come together quite as I'd hoped.
And you could even do it with a smaller piece of plywood or cut the plywood to have it, like, large. Like, our table's is
huge.
Big.
It's hugely oversized, and the reason I did that, there's two reasons I did that. One, I wanted to maximize play area so we could actually, because we had 10 people around it the other day. 11 people. Which we couldn't have done on our regular table.
And we actually all sat around it RPGing for multiple hours in a row. And
didn't have a problem.
Good.
Yeah. So that's one of the reasons I wanted that. The other reason is that is the standard large sheet of plywood, so I didn't have to cut it.
Yeah, and that was important. It's just, you have a table saw or like a, not a jigsaw, but the fucking, what is it called? Handheld
chop saw? Circ saw?
Circ saw, yeah, circular saw. You can cut it pretty easily. You don't, no worry at all. But,
yeah,
I mean, you don't need to.
I've done it.
Have the room.
You have to have a good, I mean, you have to know what you're doing. You can get away with what I did because we had a chop saw. My dad has a quite, I was up at my dad's house, so he had a few better tools up there, but he had a chop saw, which is all we needed for the 2x4s we cut. And then since we didn't have to rip the plywood, that made it a little bit easier. You can rip plywood. I've ripped plywood, but it's sort of annoying. Especially, I have a circ saw, and the base isn't square to the blade,
which makes
it really difficult to do long cuts like that.
Yeah.
And then you fuck up the edge, and it doesn't matter because you're covered in fabric, but I don't know. It was kind of nice to not
there's ways to get around that. You can smooth out the edge. It's pretty easy to change the size of if you need to, if you have a circular saw. But if you have Kendrick's circular saw, it might not be a straight cut.
You need to get a good, I built that box for all the swords.
Yeah, yeah.
That's why all the edges are all fucked up, because they couldn't get it to rip straight. But you can also go to at the lumber yard, you can say, can you cut this into these pieces for me? And they will. Anywhere. So, because they all have panel saws and shit that make it super easy. But yeah,
and I was actually thinking about maybe doing that for my table, is making a smaller one or something like that, but our house is weird. But, so he put it on, cinder blocks in his, now vacant, second room upstairs. And then we proceeded to buy about $300 worth of pillows. Probably
not as many pillows as you'd guess from that number, but that we managed to get a lot of pillows.
And so it's basically like what I keep racistly calling a Japanese tea-style gaming room. I don't know if that's racist. But
I mean, I think it's descriptive. I think people probably have a pretty good concept of that. I'm calling it the pillow room.
Like, low to the floor.
Or the soft room.
Low to the floor. You can put your legs under the table if you need that kind of positioning. There's no actual chairs, but there's, like, things to support
firmer
you
pillows,
from sitting
softer
down.
Softer pillows, and you can kind of lounge.
And I was looking at bean bags the other day, too, and I found some at Target, but they were right shitty. There were ones that, like, me as a fat person would sit down in, and they would, like, just explode out into a million little, like, styrofoam balls
everywhere.
I
found a whole lot of plastic bags flying around the house. And I might make a smaller version of Joe's.
Yeah,
Because he has that.
Joe's was with
a futon cover.
Futon, yeah, thank you.
And I might get, like, some seat covers, like the smaller cushion, like couch cushion covers, fill those up.
Yeah. I actually think those either, like, the Rocky game chairs would be cool, like as something way more sturdy if you needed it, or those little things we found at Walmart still, like the little... the little back solid things, because then you can just, like, set it up back up against the wall when you need to set it straight.
The only thing that I'm not sure of is how your people are going to get in and out if you're in the back corner. That's the only thing I haven't quite figured out yet.
Yeah, it's a little bit bigger on the floor than I thought it was going to be, but just because it's just big.
I think we'll figure it out. I got some trays. I might I'm trying to decide if I want to.
I was thinking you should put stuff on the walls, like cup holders and trays.
I was thinking about
fold down from the wall.
Finding some of those cup holders that hit on the edge of stuff and hanging them on the edge of the table.
Is it high enough off the ground?
I think so.
Okay. You can always turn the cinder blocks upwards and have, like, you know,
I've got
a foot.
I also have four more cinder blocks.
I think that
we can configure.
I think almost doing this, like, I don't know if it would be too high, but the cinder blocks at, like, standing upwards, what might be a good
one. That gives us 4 more inches from here right now.
Yeah.
But,
and it's not tons of space, but anyway, we're talking about stuff. Now we're just brainstorming on this podcast. But I'm excited
in
about
the stream of consciousness.
Game night for that reason, because I want to test this table out. And I brought Eldritch Horror just in case we wanted to, you know, do like a 4-hour game
on
sitting.
The only bummer about this is that by the time this hits any, you know, media,
they'll know.
It will be like late March.
Yeah. Well, we can always move the episodes around.
No.
Oh, okay. Well, then. That's what I was like. I was going to talk about John Wick 2, because John Wick 2 is coming out today, and, like, John Wick episode, but I figure we just wait till all of us have seen John Wick 2.
Which won't be too much longer.
Yeah.
So.
was gonna.
I like how you hum the theme song.
I love it. The theme is like catchy.
It's really catching on now. Yeah, I'm thinking.
Me.
I think we'll have to get someone to like do a take that like leitmotif and then do something cool with it and then make that the thing.
What is a take that thing?
So I want to like contact Corwin or something and get him to take that little melody that I threw together.
Oh, okay.
And then just like produce the shit out of it.
Oh yeah, so
make
it's like
something really cool with it.
Yeah, tell him that'd be cool. Like,
and then because I could be like, here's the thing, make this sound less like ass.
Have him do it for your birthday.
Yeah.
Sure.
I have one of them.
We talked about Donald Trump scared
fun
last time, right?
Fun fact, because of the way the timeline's all set up, that might happen on this episode. So if you guys got to hear the cool new intro, great. If not, I'm sorry. Future Kendrick, the editor, is a dick.
So I was debating between two topics today. We could either start and see if there's any good eventing topics, or we could do like a gaming corner thing where we talk about what good DMs do and what like you things DMs can improve on if they're newer. Because we both GM'd before.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure which one of those two topics is more interesting to you.
Well, I like both of those things.
All right, well, let's check.
I am not a good GM, but I don't know that I'm qualified to.
Well, I think that, like, things, man, so we're already starting. So I think that.
Well, I mean, you kind of led. You led me down this
path. Okay, yeah.
I mean, let's not mince words.
I complimented you, and you know your natural insecurities are coming out into the thing is that I feel like if you did what you did to GM, which was outwardly say in a 6 to 7 person game that every person can individually text message you for story elements to happen, yeah, you probably honed your skills a little more than someone who didn't do that, right? And so
I kept a lot of plates spinning.
Yeah, and that's something that's really important, I think, is one of the first aspects.
I did drop a couple plates.
To be able to like what we would perceive as multitask during a thing. So
which is absolutely critical, and I would say. And what I did, I might have bitten off a little more than I could chew, because I think that was a big ass game with a new rule set that nobody knew, not even me. I played fast and loose with the rules because of that. And I wanted everybody to enjoy themselves and feel like their characters had agency. And that, so here's my goal with that game in general, right? I wanted every session to feel like a Firefly episode.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel pretty comfortable. I feel like I did a decent job of that. I wanted every character, or every player, to feel like their character had some kind of agency. But I still had some rails that y'all had to be sort of on.
I don't consider those things to be able. I think those things are mutually exclusive in the sense that Rails is a little bit more. Being on Rails is a little bit more poignant or
it's
meaningful when you say like you're on a campaign on Rails. Like a story,
right.
A story happening and the characters being involved in it is not Rails. Like there are certain things that you as a GM need or want to happen, and you can influence that. That's because you're basically God.
Yes,
so,
and so, I mean, the big pieces I was trying to look at there was if you guys really wanted to do this side or the other thing, I was going to let that happen. The problem was mostly that there were so many people that it was difficult to make sure everyone was engaged.
Yeah.
Because, and this is one of the things that I struggle with as a DM, and I do no one any fucking favors as a player.
And we're going to use the words GM and DM game master, dungeon master interchangeably, so
yeah,
don't get all freaked out.
So, as a game master, I struggle with it, and as a player, I do no one any favors. I realize I'm a shitty player here.
Actually, you've been doing really good in Star Wars, because there's something about that game that...
Yeah, I mean, I...
Anyway.
Yeah, I, yeah. Anyway, but... you can't help players that aren't putting the energy in about their character. Like, if you don't give a shit about your character, I can't give a shit about your character.
Or I can't force you to care more,
so,
which is the thing that needs to happen.
And that's where, if that's fine, that's fine. Like, for me as a player, I often roll, like, okay, so the D&D campaign is a fine example. I didn't even make that character, right? Because I fucked up and double scheduled the character creation night.
Well, so let's not get
too deep. So, all I was saying was, the reason I'm going all this, almost everybody in that game that I play with Serenity, three players were super engaged and super, like, their characters were getting developed, they were driving the story, they're having a great time. Three players were borderline engaged, and when they showed up, they played, but they didn't always show up. And we had a couple people that were totally off, just disengaged. And so I think I did pretty good. mostly because the big thing that I learned out of that was I had goals, but I didn't have the fine details locked in stone.
Okay, so you hit on like 50 different things there that I think are important.
That was where I was, that was the...
You got multitasking, which I think is important. So being able to tell your players that if you need something, do it, or being able to handle people who break off from a group is something that you need to be able to do but can't always do well. So being able to practice that ability to say, all right, I've dealt with you for a few minutes, now let's go with this other group, back and forth, and maintaining like the same kind of idea of where they're at. The milieu, or like the feel of the campaign. So that was one thing that you hit on with the guard. You wanted every episode, everything to feel like an episode of Firefly. You can, like, things that, like, I was doing with the Halloween campaigns, like, it was different type of story that you were, was happening during Halloween than other times. That's kind of fun. Because you can get the feel for, like, it's, like, relatable, and you can do different things, and you can do things inside of the RPG to, like, make your players understand that this is more of, like, a horror-themed one, or this is, like, adventure, and this one's, like, a poignant episode because there's these characters that you didn't normally see in it, right? The other thing you said, being adaptable was the one I was trying to get to, because you said that towards the end of what you were saying was being able to, not having the fine details locked down, but being able to have an overarching story. And there's like three or four steps to being adaptable. One of them is, how much have you built your own world, right? Mm-hmm. Did you do it yourself, or do you know? One of the problems I ran into with 40K was I didn't know enough about 40K to have an engaging campaign, because people would ask me questions and I'm like, I think there's a place where you can do that there. I'm not really sure. And it's like hard to articulate how you would do something if you don't know the world enough. And so D&D was easy because I can make it up and say there's an inn.
Yeah.
40K is harder because it's like a wider universe, but it's also like a more like narrow universe, right?
It's a larger universe that's also kind of more defined, and if you don't know it.
Yeah, and so there's that. There's the GM knowing about the world they're in. And Star Wars is a great example of like, you know, Kate's doing a great job of like, and I assume Emily, but I haven't really actually been in a group, but of knowing in the world enough to know like, okay, there is something that would perform that task, or there's a medium where you do that. The second thing is being able to have adaptability with your own story that you want to tell, because part about being a GM is telling a story, and you want your story to be told because you spend time to write it, right? Mm-hmm. But being able to adapt when people are like doing weird shit or not able to do that, or the characters in your campaign aren't ones that are built for your story, so you have to change things. And the third level to me is being able to have things happen alongside your own story that affect your story. So like there's like the campaign your characters are on, but there's also a whole entire world happening around it.
Yeah, you're not.
So like when you go blow up someone's house, it has long lasting effects elsewhere. And it's not just that the guy's mad at you, it's that maybe the neighborhood doesn't trust you anymore, or the police are looking for you because you like committed a crime, right?
Yeah.
There's things like that can happen.
You don't live in a vacuum.
You don't live in a vacuum. And that was kind of like those three adaptability areas, is like you need to know the milieu in order to adapt. You need to be able to have your story happen but be able to change things if they go off track, and you need to be able to understand that the world around them is going to affect them. And the last thing I don't know, we're so close already. How long has it been? Like 5 minutes? Quit driving so well.
I will never drive well.
One of the last ones I want to talk about was, this isn't necessarily the GM, but the GM can force this behavior by asking players to do things. So with regard to like Serenity, and sometimes, and with our, Gary did an amazing job of this with our Supers campaign. The thing that we did with the 4th edition D&D group, and some of the Star Wars stuff, I think, too. And so there's some other ones in there. But having characters create their characters is one thing. Like, having someone roll a character is one thing. But having someone invest in that character, like you're saying, you can't have someone care about your character, is something that you can entice by saying, hey, why don't you go write a backstory and you'll get some extra XP? Or if you do some of this stuff to, like, build your character out so I can care about your character just as much as you do, then I can incentivize that behavior. Like, if you do that, maybe I'll read your backstory and find something I can give you, like a special item, because something like that. And so those stories typically tend to work better when you can do that, because, like, in the Supers campaign, we all had, like, special backstories, and it caused, like,
strife
and things like that.
Yeah, a lot of the relationships made sense.
Mm-hmm. And then the D&D one as well, like, there was, like, you had a backstory for your like mate, your sorcerer that was really intense, I really liked that one, happened like that. And then in Serenity as well. Like,
Serenity
was a
fantastic example of that. Yeah. Garion and Emily both put an incredible amount of time and energy. Garion had built this whole elaborate backstory for this guy where he was betrayed by the government and he was a war hero, but he was blind, but it was this whole huge thing. And then the entire thing was really a thinly veiled attempt to fuck with the rules. But he still played it off with a rich backstory, and the whole character was basically just John Wayne. But, like...
Yeah.
Or it was Clint Eastwood. No, was it? Yeah, it was Clint Eastwood. That's what it was. Because Shun Dong Wu means Clint Eastwood. That's what... He found the Chinese words for those words. And he translated it, and that's what his character's name was. And he was blind, but he put so much skill into sniping that he could actually still hit stuff. And we were just seeing if you could fuck with a game, because when you were blind, it was like these little things. Like, he read it, like, it says here you could still do stuff, you're just at a huge disadvantage. And so he just offset the disadvantage by being a really good shot.
Yeah.
And that made for a very fun game, honestly, even though it's kind of ridiculous. Because we'd create the stories, like, how did you shoot that? Well, we decided, well, he can't shoot people who are standing still because he can't hear them. Mm-hmm. So they have to take a step. So you take a step, you can shoot them in the foot. And then when they yell, he shoots them in the face. Like, it was like, oh, okay, he's just got really good...
Yeah, I mean, it's like the blind samurai
kind of. And that kind of shit that made it really fun and engaging, and also it brought everyone else more engaged.
And his character now, too. I mean, you hear Mark and Joe talking about how cool, like, Garion's character is. He's a droid who thinks he can use the Force, but, like,
yeah.
Everything, he surrounded himself with, like, things that are Force-like. So he feels like he's using the Force, but it's just a droid, and, like, if you follow the Star Wars universe, you know that, like, droids are not Force-sensitive. Like,
yeah.
They can be pushed, but they can't actually be, like...
So, like, he thinks he's Force-pushing a door open, but really he's just sidling over to the control panel and interfacing, like, with it, and
yeah.
It opens the door, and he's like, whoa, look at that!
Yeah.
But he's also deluded. Garion makes characters that are deluded a lot. I know, that's kind of...
And it's
fun.
It's an effect to, like, do something, like, fun, and... Those kind of things help not only you as a GM engage with that character, because that character now is something that you can attach to, mm-hmm. you can attach your story to.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it helps other players feel like the game is more interesting because someone did something really crazy.
Crazy. And that's the other part, too, as a DM. I find, personally, as a DM, and there's different styles to this, too, I shy away from telling people no.
Because the dice will fail them if it's something that's ridiculous.
Yeah, if it succeeds,
then it's fucking awesome.
Yeah, set people up to do awesome, crazy shit. Like, set them up to hack together their comm link with some ancient Jedi shit. You'll never pass this test, so I'll do it. Shit, he passed the test. Okay, I guess you're flying your ship remote now. Fuck it. Let's see where this goes. But, so that's where you can still guide the story without totally railing it. And that's and a really always, solid, it's like meta storytelling.
There's
right?
always yeah, exactly. And there's always good story points to connect in this meta story idea where you're like, oh, well, this will help them do something in the future, but they don't know that yet. So I'm gonna let this happen, or I'm gonna be like, oh no, you failed, but there's something still good that came out of it because you can't let it happen. But
right.
you got to keep in mind, nobody knows what you're gonna do yet. Like, people can guess about what's gonna happen in a story arc, but nobody knows, and you have an advantage over that in the storytelling aspect. The
biggest, most important part here to remember is something that I think is easy to forget when you consume a lot of media and you you watch Lost, or you watch Star Wars, or you watch Red Dwarf, anything that has, like, a long story arc. When they started, they didn't know any of that shit. And when Star Wars was created, Darth Vader was not Luke's father. That was not the story. That
talked
was
about
changed.
On a previous podcast, yeah, by the way.
That was changed. And it was retconned, basically, right? Mm-hmm. You can do that, too. You can have a story in your head that you can change based off of what's happening. It's not bad.
Maybe that's
great.
The fourth level of adaptability, or maybe that talks about that second level.
Well, it's just
where
that,
you're
it's
like,
that meta storytelling,
you're able
right?
to, like, manipulate aspects. And I was talking about this the other day with someone. It's this idea, like, this thing that we're talking about here where you can do this meta storytelling is what... people are doing with your favorite universes right
yeah.
now. This is what the MCU is doing to your Marvel characters. This yep. is what this is what Star Wars is doing to your favorite Star Wars characters. Is
exactly.
They're saying Legends is this thing, but we have reserved the right to retell
pull
Grandma
aspects of these things and do what we
yeah,
want.
Like,
yeah,
like we reserve the right to tell Mara Jade's story, or we reserve the right to retell Iron Fist or something
yeah.
like that. Like, we are telling these stories, so
sure.
like listen to our stories as opposed to expecting something that you've already seen.
Or they can do things like take aspects of characters and put them in other characters because we mm-hmm. want it. And what I'm saying with that is for example, say you've got to go meet the Grand Duke, right? He's a very important guy. You're going to go to his house. It's like, okay, I rolled to burn it down. Why? Fucking hate dukes. Okay. Well, you've just written 6 pages of story where the Grand Duke is actually a vampire and he's going to betray the people and all this stuff, but your fucking rogue is trying to burn the building down.
Guess what? The vampire doesn't have to die from the house burning down.
Or... he doesn't have to die from it, or you can be like, well, you burned it down, and in doing so, you angered the king over here. Now the king is the vampire. You just do quick global find replace, and you can...
Or, like, you killed the vampire king, and now all the vampires in the county are after
you. And you can see, so like, you have options. You can basically rail people and be like, yeah, you killed him, and he was totally innocent, dick.
That count could become the leader of the vampires in the area instead. But you have the same character role. The stats are there.
Yeah, so you just change the name. And then the player gets to do stupid, crazy shit, but he doesn't ruin your story.
And you get to teach the players that... nothing is without consequence, which is a very important lesson to teach people.
Which is very good, because then they won't do as much crazy shit if consequences happen. And it's not bullshit, not like rocks fall, you die, but like you...
this is that third aspect of adaptability we're talking about, where you do think the world around you is not... you're not in a vacuum, right?
Yeah.
If you do stupid or shit, or I'm sorry, if you do bombastic shit, then things will happen, because people will notice that you set an entire house on fire, or you killed somebody in public, or... that strange men came to town and then people started disappearing. And you're
and they just stopped trusting strangers.
Those things are things you need to think about. And you
fucked yourself. Not necessarily fucked yourself, but now you have to deal with it.
And you learn very well that those things are true if you ever play 40K or any kind of thing. And people are paranoid as shit.
Well, and when you start playing that as players, they'll stop letting him do that. They're like, I want to set him on fire. They're like, no, man, remember last time you did that? Mm-hmm. And then you had to do that? Like,
and then you don't have to railroad people because other people will. Because
they'll help themselves.
And this is a lot of some of that as a side kind of side note has to do with alignments too. If your game has alignments, you can force people to like be like, okay, your alignment's shifting because you're doing things that are not neutral anymore.
And so again, you don't say no, you can't do that, your alignment doesn't allow it. But you can say this will impact your alignment.
Yeah, so if you do this, people are going to start viewing you as evil and like you're going to start having greater effects on the party.
And you know, in old school D&D rules, if you're a paladin, you lose your paladinship.
Yeah, there's actually
and it's like, are you sure you want to do this because this will burn up your paladinship. And you're just a fucking shitty fighter now. Like, so that's
kind of,
and that's better than just saying no, you can't do that, or no, that's dumb. Or
presenting those bad things. So like, if you burn this house down, you could kill any number of like innocent servants. Like, there's a bunch of people in there that aren't bad.
And that's where sometimes the chaotic players who are not as invested will do shit like that. Yeah. And that's just a way you get them invested. I don't care about killing some people. Okay, well, you know, there's a lot of treasure in there you're gonna destroy. Like you can entice them away,
or you can learn about them too. Yeah, and see what their motivations are.
You can let them do it and let the consequences happen. You know, that's what happens. I mean, it's not necessarily bad stuff either, because one of the biggest frustrations, right, is you write this whole story. I wrote a whole nemesis for Emily's character, right? And she was on this obviously marked. That's fine. Just put your truck anywhere. Got to back around this corner just right. It's just, I got to be in this spot exactly right. I guess I'm no better as I do this. But at least I'm not in anyone's way.
All right.
The thing I said was I wanted them to go to this one space station. So I told them, okay, well, you're arriving at Boros or whatever it was. And there's a space station out here. And you have a contact. I forget what it was, but I basically put, you know, big flashing lights on the thing and said, go here. And they're like, well, we want to go to the planet first. Okay, well, I'll get some supplies or something. Yeah, I want a bird. And he's like, I want to buy a bird. It's like, the fuck do I do with that? Like, that's terrible. I got nothing I could do with this. Well, guess what happened as she was doing that? She's like, okay. And I'm sitting here, like, jotting down notes. Well, your nemesis on that space station, I didn't say this, but I'm thinking, oh, now she has a big fucking aviary. Because with more birds than you've ever seen. And so I changed the story where their interaction, which was going to be at her home place, was at the bird store. They went to the pet store and they said, well, there's one bird. Well, there's only one left. Okay. Her nemesis busts in and buys it right up from under her. That's how they met. I didn't figure that out until 2 minutes before it happened. And that story perfectly motivated her to hate their nemesis in a better way than I could have possibly written. And then they wanted to go back to steal the bird, which got them up to the space station to interact with their nemesis. And it was like, this, I could have been like, no, you can't go buy a pet. That's stupid. Go to the space station. Or I could have been like, yeah, sure. Let's see where this fucking goes. Because it is group storytelling.
Yeah.
And I think that's an important part to remember is it's you have a framework, but it's still a group storytelling. And that's the fun part, to be honest. Otherwise, it's just you sitting here listening to someone talk the whole time.
Like our podcast.
Which we really got to get, like, stickers or a store. We should get, like, a...
You had stickers. What happened to them all?
I don't know.
Like, I got, like, four, and I gave two of them out, and then the other two disappeared, and I'm like, what happened?
Yeah, I got it. Well, we got to sell them. That's what we got to do. Oh. Make money.
Well, we're supposed to get the name out there, and then we make money. First you get the girl, then you get the khakis. Or, no, wait. First you get the khakis, then you get the money, then you get the girl.
How do khakis get you money?
Because they get you the job.
What job?
The job that requires khakis.
We're both wearing jeans right now. Okay. Well,
so thanks for listening to our talk about GMs, guys.
Acer.net/store.
Not existing yet. Maybe by this... Well, maybe it will. Who knows?
I don't know.
All right. Well, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time on Sit Sock.
We'll see you, but you won't see us.